The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with great value travel insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Ireland has a very proud history in cycling, as you know. Hard men like Stephen Roach, Sean Kelly, Dan Martin, Nicholas Roach, grinding their way for thousands of kilometres across Europe in the sports. Well, in the sports, huge races, I suppose I could say. But if you think that 2,000 kilometres of the three-week Tour de France is tough, wait till you get a load of Ulton Coyle from Dundalk. He's just completed the Transcontinental. Now, the Transcontinental is 4,300 kilometres, and that's in 11 days. And no support crew to back him up at all. So he's here now with me. Well, he's in the London studio. How are you doing there, Ulton? Are you all right?
Good, Dave. Yeah, how are you?
I'm very good indeed. I'm just trying to work this out. 4,300 kilometres in 11 days. That's about over 250, 260 miles or whatever. Or 2,000. Like, how long is that? That's in miles, if you do 400 kilometres a day, that'll be over 250 miles a day for 11 days in a row.
Yeah, it's... You want to average about 400k a day, 450k a day if you want to try and win it. But some days, you know, with bad luck and all the rest that goes on, you might only do 150. So other days you might be doing 550 kilometres. So it kind of jumps around a bit. And I try and not get too caught up in the statistics, because they tend to pickle your brain a bit and you wouldn't set off on it if you spent too much time thinking about it.
No, indeed not. So but by the way, I mentioned the Transcontinental. What is, first of all, the Transcontinental?
So, it's an adventure race set up by a long-distance cyclist called Mike Hall. And there's four set checkpoints that you have to hit, but in between that, it's up to you to make your own route and try and be a bit creative and see if you can find little shortcuts here and there. So it's kind of like Cannonball Run, I guess, yeah. That movie from the 80s.
But in a car.
No, not in a car. No, not at all. But all kinds of people show up, you know, from 66-year-olds, I think, was the oldest guy in the race, to a 19-year-old. Who completed it, which was quite amazing. So yeah, it's a very democratic race, I guess.
Okay, like fitness is one thing, but it's only one of many things. Obviously, you are an experienced long distance cyclist. I presume you wouldn't be doing this just straight off the bat. Have you done any big sort of things before, any trials or anything like that?
Not really. I haven't done multi-day things. I was quite good over a day over that distance, but. Yeah, like you said, fitness is only a very small percentage of it. And then there's the whole being able to sleep fast as well and eat fast, you know, because when you're sleeping, you're racing. When you're eating, you're racing. When you're shopping, you're racing. So being really efficient off the bike is probably nearly more important as being efficient on the bike. If you just keep plodding out slow miles, but you're really good off the bike, you'll do really well. Whereas if you're really quick on the bike and can't function off, you're going to struggle.
Okay, but I mean, like the Tour de France, everybody's following you. There's all sorts of people in little cars. Mm. There's medics, there's TV cameras, there's every other damn thing as well. This one here, you're on your own, right? You're completely on your own. It's a self-supported thing. It's non-stop, of course, as well. So what does it mean to be on your own? I mean, obviously, there's no cheating involved, is there?
Well, you can cheat if you want, I guess, but you carry a GPS tracker, which it's amazing because it gives all your family and whoever wants to support you 3-minute updates so they can see this little dot working its way across Europe. So people will monitor that and there'll be commissars who check in and make sure you haven't jumped from 40k an hour up to 80k an hour. And it's like, what the hell's going on there? He's jumped on in a taxi or something like that. So you can't really cheat, I guess, if somebody's watching you too much. But the unsupported side is what the race is all about. So you're your own man and you have to fix any problem that you come up against. Even asking for directions off a stranger is deemed kind of not in the spirit of unsupported races. So that's
wait a minute. Yeah. You're in some country that you've never been in before. You're on your bicycle, you're on your own, and you can't even necessarily ask for directions.
No, it's a grey area. The organiser set up all these questions in the beginning to see, to calibrate people's idea of unsupported, and that was deemed quite grey, whether that was right or wrong.
What?
So, yeah, it's mad, because you're just meant to have all your homework done.
Yeah, but I mean, you can only have all your homework done, you know, in terms of, you know, this is it in theory. When you actually reach those roads or reach those crossroads, literally, you could easily be going 20, 40, 60 miles out of your way. You are your own medic on these things, and I'm sure you'd needed to be pretty well damn good in terms of how to fix yourself up. Your own chef, in terms of it's pretty good and pretty important to be eating the right stuff. Your own guide, your own mechanic, your own motivator, and your own masseuse, I presume, as well. I mean, like, let's take the first one. Did you get much sleep?
I did, yeah. My kind of strategy was, I guess, don't go too wild in the beginning, get a couple of good sleeps early on. And I was checking myself into hotels and kind of taking a slightly luxurious approach to it, whereas a lot of people are just sleeping ditches in bus stops for 20 minutes and up to 2 hours and get going again. And I thought I'd kind of work myself into that slowly, but I'd favour hotels over ditches, and it took a bit of time to get used to sleeping in a ditch as well, because you keep thinking something's going to jump on your head, or there's a dog over in the bush, or is there snakes in this country, or is there scorpions, that kind of thing. And then with the medic side of things, you'd find a pharmacy and you go in, and I had an issue with a mouth infection, but I just opened my mouth and the pharmacist was like, ah, yeah, you've got this. And she was Italian. We'd know, we couldn't communicate, but she'd give me what she thought I needed, and away I went. So, yeah, you'll always get looked after, really, in that way. That's not too much.
Glad to hear that. But I presume, like, along the way, so you're wearing this, what is effectively like one of these criminal ankle bracelets kind of things, like an ASBO thingy-bob.
ASBO,
in terms of,
yeah.
So therefore, like, you know, people can track you as you go along. But, I mean, do you have to actually hit checkpoints, if you like? Do you have to go from A to B to C to D at some stage, regardless of how you get there?
No, there's four checkpoints, and you can hit them in any order you want. So that allows some ferry crossings or ferry routes to come into it. So some people got the ferry from Italy to Montenegro and went to checkpoints in reverse order. And that seemed to work out quite well, because they got a 12-hour overnight sleep. Mm. And then it seemed, I think the first guy in came in 8th place, and I think that was a bit of a surprise, because I think he might have appeared to be further down the standings when he first got off the ferry. So it seemed to work out quite well. But generally people stuck to the 1, 2, 3, 4. And done it that way.
Okay, I'm trying to work out your modesty here, Ultram, because earlier on I did say, like, you know, what kind of training do you have in that? You won the British 24-hour championship in 2012. Tell me about that.
I did, yeah. I'd been... somebody kind of entered me into it one year, about, I think, 3 years before, and I gave it a go and managed to get 10th, I think, on that time. And then I thought, right, okay, so with a bit more... specific training, I might do better, and 3 years later I managed to win it. Yeah, so that was quite good. And then it been a bit of a thing for the next 2 years. I kept, I give it another go. I didn't manage to win, but my mileage has kept improving. But then this year I decided, no, I'm not going through all that again, because the training's quite demanding. So, but with all that training in mind, like, I knew my body should be able to cope with the demands of this race. So, it stood me in good stead.
Just as a matter of interest, I mean, if you have to do about 250 or 260 miles a day, say, or 400 kilometres a day for this thing here for 11 days in a row, how many, how far could you cycle in any given 24 hours?
The best I managed was 513 miles. Yeah, that's, I don't know if I'd be doing that again, but those kind of mileages are hard to comprehend in a day, and I can't even get my head around them now. But when you're in the kind of throes of competition and you might be in a bit of a race, it's amazing what little bit extra you can get out of your body, especially when you have a support crew around you, feeding you.
Hold on, a support crew around you feeding you is one thing, but as I said, in terms of this thing here, which is the Transcontinental, we're talking about, once again, being your own medic, your own chef, your own guide, your own mechanic, your own masseuse, and by the way, one of the other words I use, and I want to ask you about that now, your own motivator. Would it be fair to say that even though you are alone, you're not really your own motivator, because once you know the ASBO thing is working and people are following you back home big time, does it give you a real boost?
It does, definitely. I think I was in Slovenia and I was going to buckle, and I'd phoned home to, I'd heard home were having great crack watching this tracker, and I didn't realise to what extent the whole family was getting around it and having a great buzz. And once I found out that like it was such entertainment, I thought, Jesus, right, sure, I might as well keep going and give them a bit of a laugh. So, yeah, and then a cousin of mine, Ed, I spoke to him out of the blue one day, and I couldn't really kid him on. Like, with people you're more, you're closer to, you can kind of manipulate them to around to your way of thinking. So if you want to give up, you can kind of get them to support you. Whereas with him, it was a little bit more difficult to fool him. And after talking to him, I realised, right, sure, I better keep going for another bit anyway.
Well, then, why did this whole thing appeal to you in the first place? I mean, it sounded, you mentioned the Cannonball Run earlier on. Did you kind of watch the Cannonball Run and say, this appeals to me, I know how to ride a bike, I'm pretty good at all this, maybe if I marry the two together, wow, there's the Transcontinental, this guy Mike Hall has introduced it, damn, I'll join that.
I think when I heard about it, the first thing that sprung to mind was the Cannonball Run. I was thinking, that sounds brilliant. There's no, very little rules beyond the self-supported thing. You know, it allowed for a certain amount of freedom. And then I think Mad Max has always been a big influence on me. And I like that kind of post-apocalyptic world that was created. And I thought,
hold on a second, you like being chased by all these loonies that have been kind of ravaged by radiation? Hold on a second. are you talking about the old Mad Max movie or the new Mad Max? I presume the old one.
Yeah.
Have you seen the new one, by the way?
One and two. I liked it. Not as much as,
that's
it actually
great.
Made me enjoy the first ones more. But so there was a bit of that, and then, yeah, a lot of people have asked me this, why would you do it? And it's always quite hard to answer, but I think it scares you, and there's definitely something about kind of throwing yourself into the unknown and seeing what happens. And it definitely did scare me.
And do you feel as though, like, you know, you're cycling through kind of people going about their daily business and all the rest of it, but actually your little world on your little bike is a completely different kind of thing. It's like as though you are a bit of a kind of a Mad Max going through the fringes of society, if you like, being a bit weird.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The whole race kind of seeps through these little towns at all hours of the morning, and there's these kind of weird insects and bikes sleeping in bus stops and finding little places to get rest and food and stuff. So yeah, you're operating on the fringes of things, all right.
How many minutes a day, or how many hours a day, or is it literally you get up in the morning out of that ditch? That's bizarre. And you get onto your bike and off you go. And the next time you really get off the bike is just to go to the loo or whatever and go to sleep. I mean, are you basically on the bike all day long?
Yeah, completely. Like, if you're not riding, you're resting, and then eating in between that.
And where'd you start from?
So there's no, you start, it's 50k east of Brussels in a place called Gerardsbergen on the Moor, which is quite an iconic climb within cycling. The Tour of Flanders most notably goes over it. So Mike Hall picks these iconic places like the Moor and Mount Ventoux. They were the most recognisable within cycling culture.
And the bike that you used, am I talking one bike here, or did you have to change bikes? I presume something went wrong on occasion, probably lots of occasions, but did you stick with the same bike and just fix it?
Yeah. They, like, generally, you should be able to get through the whole thing with one bike, with, you know, basic mechanical stuff. You just kind of clean it and maintain it, really. But because I'd done the time trials and the 24-hour stuff, I was quite used to riding a time trial bike for a long period, so I'd kind of managed to develop quite a comfortable position on that. So it made sense to me to ride to ride that bike, but it was quite a surprise to a lot of people when I showed up. It's like, what is this thing?
And whatever about asking people, by the way, for directions, were you allowed to use GPS?
Oh, yeah. So people had spent like months kind of working out the best route and doing all that stuff. So you can do a lot of work on the computer beforehand, you know, figuring out the best routes and looking on Google Street View to get, you know, the...
Yeah.
Familiarise yourself.
Listen, I don't know what the weather's like in London at the moment, but like, what was the weather like? Which is the worst weather? Is it searing heat or the kind of weather we have outside the window here in Dublin at the moment, which is lousy, rainy weather? Which is worse?
Yeah, I think the rain always depresses you a bit. You know, when you get up, and I was in Slovenia, got up and looked out the hotel window and it was lashing down, I was like, oh no. And that was the day I rode past the sign for the airport coming into Ljubljana. It was lashing rain, I got a puncture, and then I was thinking, to hell with this. So yeah, it's probably a lot easier to buckle when it's lashing down with rain, but the heat is a nightmare too. But when you're moving, it's not too bad. It's when you stop and you're going into a shop and you're getting stuff and you're eating outside, and then the sweat's just pouring off you. Yeah. But at least when you're moving, you've got some kind of wind speed to...
All right, but look, it is the Transcontinental. You were in it to win. How did you do in it in the end?
I managed to come in fourth. I was about a day behind the winner, a day and a half behind the winner, and there was quite a close race for second, third and fourth. We were all, I think we were within 3 hours of each other at the end, so it was close to get on the podium, but at the end, when I was coming into Istanbul, I could have been last, I didn't give a...
Yeah, right, exactly.
I didn't care at all. Yeah.
And is that a once-in-a-lifetime thing, Ulton? Are you going to do it again?
Yeah, this is the other common question. I don't know if it's my style of riding, to be honest. Like, I don't know how motivated I would be to go out and practice sleeping in ditches, but you never know. It's too early to say.
Ulton Coyle from Dundalk, 4,300 kilometres in 11 days. May the road rise with you. Thanks a million for talking to us, Ulton.